cool to be
I'd
the same.
Like us all to be one big community.
Not necessarily was politically correct.
I surely don't need to tell you.
Has it really changed your life that
you've let somebody drill into you? Release those red balloons, Naina. We've made it to Ouch Talk Show number 99. And Rob's here too. He'll tell you what's in store. Wait for it.
And here it comes. All work and no pay. Do you do volunteering? And what do you get from it, if not money? Well, we'll be hearing some dramatic volunteering success stories.
I'm pretty sure you don't, Rob. Anyway, disability is a big theme at the 2013 Edinburgh Festival, and we've got two of the disabled turns from this month's event. A comedian who goes by the name Lost Voice Guy, plus Tom and Dougie, half of Racing Minds improv comedy troupe. They're visually impaired, so lost sight guys, if you like.
And for the 99th time, we have music to end the show. Blind singer-songwriter from the US, Kevin Reeves, plays us out with a track from his second album.
And in just a second, we'll be saying hello to two irrepressible guests from across the pond. That is, if we can stop them teasing each other, as apparently they've been doing on Twitter since we booked them. Stay tuned.
Ouch! Disability Talk from the BBC with Rob Crossan and Kate Monaghan.
And at this early juncture, should we have a predictable conversation about how hot the weather is?
The weather has been beautiful.
And but for disabled types,
yep.
Actually, for me, I've quite enjoyed it. Well, I've got a love-hate relationship with the sun.
I was going to say, you're all albino and stuff, so surely you don't like...
Well, I love the sun, but the sun hates me. That's basically the dynamic. And I do have some prescription sunblock, which I described earlier as being like pouring treacle and creme fraiche all over myself.
Ooh,
but I
find
that
delightful.
It can be sexy, but in a slightly disgusting, smeary way. But anyway, yeah, I've said too much. And what about
plenty.
You? Hang on a minute. What about you? You must have no problems whatsoever, as far as I can tell.
No, I mean, the heat makes it difficult to sleep, and when you can't sleep already, it's a pain in the bum. But generally, it's brilliant, because the hot and humid weather is a joy on my joints. The sun warms them from the inside out. It's wonderful. So yeah, it's better actually. Pain decreases in the summer.
So anyway, stop guessing about the weather. Tell us about our guests.
We've got two great guests patiently waiting on the line. In New York City, we've got the comedy world's chief box ticker. It's the female Muslim stand-up comedian with cerebral palsy, Maysoon Zayid. Is it hot there, Maysoon?
No, it actually dropped 30 degrees in one day, and it's chilly in New York City.
And Lawrence Carter Long joins us from Washington, D.C. on this his busiest day of the year. Now, Lawrence, you're a bit of a know-it-all on U.S. disability issues, and we love you all the more for it. Yes. So hang on a minute. Why is today the day that we're recording this show, July the 26th? Why is it so special?
Today is the actual 23rd anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which was passed, if you can do your maths, back in 1990. So every politician, every advocacy group, anybody that's ever heard of disability is doing their activities today in D.C.
And hang on a minute. Nobody seems to give a monkey's about our version. What's our version called?
Well, our version is the DDA, the Disability Discrimination Act, Rob.
Yes,
do you have any idea how long ago ours was passed? Do you think it was before the Americans, after the Americans?
I think before.
Before? Okay.
Am I right?
I'm not going to tell you. So how long before?
Because you don't
know. I do. Guess the year.
Oh, okay. 1988.
I'm afraid you're wrong.
Ours was actually just
18 years ago.
Really?
So that was in 1995, is that right?
So hang on a minute. So you, Lawrence, over there in the States, you've got 5 years on us. I mean, is everyone going to be partying tonight? Is there actually a kind of 4th of July, Thanksgiving-esque thing going on in D.C. right now?
Well, we don't have many reasons to celebrate, so everybody takes advantage of this. You know, when you're first in the queue to get the good parking or the right to die, we have to take these things as we can. And so people have been here all week. There have been conferences going on. There have been rallies. And today being the anniversary itself, I think we'll be kicking it off tonight.
Obviously, the ADA gave some basic human rights, but what is it that you want more from your government now? What more rights do you want?
Well, the ADA was a template. It was, I think, an example of what we could be doing, what we should be doing. The problems we ran into here in the States was that we weren't able to predict how the courts would interpret those laws. So the courts put on a lot of restrictions, basically saying that you have to prove you're disabled to fall under the ADA. But if you prove that you were disabled, then you probably weren't disabled enough to take advantage of it. So they had to come back and revisit it back in 2008 and add some amendments. And so I think we're still basically trying to work out how the ADA itself will work. We didn't have the social model here in the U.S. We were basically right. tied to the medical model for a very long time. And so I think we've got to, you know, even though we passed our act a little bit before you, we'd still had some catching up to do.
And what about you, Maysoon? Does this anniversary have any relevance at all to you in your life?
I didn't know about the anniversary until Lawrence just mentioned it, and I don't know why I wasn't invited to any of the activities. And this is like the second time DC has like completely just ignored me, because I wasn't invited to Obama's iftar for the Muslim breaking of the fast, and I wasn't invited to ADA week. But I'm okay with it, because I don't think it's a really big deal, because 23 years is nothing. If it was like 25 or 20, it would be something to celebrate, but 23 is just kind of random.
Yeah, okay, they're saving you for the big quarter century.
Lawrence, I think you know you need to invite her for the next one.
Well, we were trying to save it for the 25th, but she just trumped us.
No, but realistically, like, one of the things, you know, I've learned a lot about ADA from Lawrence, and one of the things that I find most disappointing is, like he said, when you tell people that they need to enforce it, they're always looking for the loophole that makes them not enforce it. And this week alone, on one of the biggest news stations in America, a commentator on air said they do not invite wheelchair guests because the set is not accessible. And I've been on set. There's three steps. All they need is a removable ramp. And instead, they've chosen not to invite disabled wheelchair
crazy.
Users.
Did that surprise you to hear that?
It surprised me, because this was one of the more liberal cable news stations. But it's nothing new, because earlier this year, we had a television show come out and say they didn't use a disabled actor because they didn't feel a disabled actor could handle the stress of a 12-hour day.
Do you know, I don't think that would happen in the UK with broadcasters, but maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, it's the holy month of Ramadan at the moment in the Islamic calendar. And that means for 30 days, Muslims don't take on food or water between sunrise and sunset, which sounds very, very difficult to me. Maysoon, you usually fast, but this year it's not quite gone to plan this time, has it?
Yeah, it's Ramadan, and for Ramadan, Muslims are not allowed to put anything in any orifice. So you can't drink, you can't eat, you can't have sex, you can't smoke, nothing. Wow. We allow teeth brushing because we don't want the world to hate us more than they already do. So brushing your teeth is an exception. And for 30 years, I participated in Ramadan every single year. You fast from sunrise to sunset, and then at sunset you can gorge yourself. And actually, dozens of people in Qatar ended up in the hospital the first night of Ramadan because they ate so much they burst. I'm not kidding.
Wow.
It's documented. So when people think that we're going to die, it's actually you're just flipping the hours that you're eating. But this year is extremely difficult for many people because the days are very long. So they're 15, 16-hour days without water.
And you're not fasting this year then?
This is my first year not fasting. And it was very sad for me because I've always fasted. I only missed like one day in the past. And then this year, when I went to fast on the first day of Ramadan, I started shaking uncontrollably and I had to quit. And the shaking stayed for an entire week. So I knew I was done and it wasn't just one bad day. Because I've had one bad day before, but it was done.
Yeah.
And the good news is that's not a big deal. Because in the Islamic religion, if you can't fast, you don't have to. You donate instead. And if you don't have money to donate, you donate time. So it's not like I'm going to hell in a handbasket and part of my damnation of being disabled is me being forsaken from this ritual. It's completely acceptable.
So who are the people who are exempt from the fasting rules then?
If you're pregnant or on your period,
nice.
You're exempt. If you simply can't because you take medication or you have a medical condition that doesn't make it physically possible, if you're a child under the age of 12, and if you simply don't want to.
Okay.
You can donate.
Is it true that your mum has been kind of just assuming that you wouldn't be able to do it each year?
Every single year. My mother is so funny and cute. And like I said, how's that for moral support? Every single year I've fasted, on the first day she'll come to me and say, you know, you don't have to. And she'll pay the donation on my behalf to feed a poor person for 30 days because she's convinced that either A, I'm sneaking food behind her back or else I'd never make it, or B, I'm bound to fail because there's no way I could possibly succeed. So like I said, it really builds me up and it's great moral support. And this year she was like, finally, thank God.
My payments are worth it.
Yeah. So let's go into this month's headlines. I think it's basically been quite an awesome month for disability news, especially for controversial and quite horrible things, which
it
we're going to go into.
Indeed. Now,
and we're going to get you all to join in on this. We'd like you to at least guess before we tell you the answers to these following questions.
Yep, and we have 1 minute to give us the answers to these questions. So
Lawrence, Maysoon, are you prepared for this?
I don't know the rules, but I know I'm
there's
gonna
no
win.
Rules. There's just no talk rules. At us.
I
it's
know.
Fine.
I know Lawrence has no chance of beating me at all.
Okay, have we got a countdown style clock, producers? Brilliant. Okay, are we ready? Then off we go. So, why has rapper J. Cole had to apologize this month?
Because he mentioned autism and retard.
Whoa, one at a time.
That was in stereo. How'd you like that?
Yeah. Really
that
was good.
It only happens with people who have CP.
Exactly.
He mentioned autistic and retard as a derogative in a lyric.
Perfect.
And we can't read you the actual lyrics due to decency. Let's go on to the next question. Also in popular culture, why is Disney's new Lone Ranger movie being criticized by disability groups?
Because one of the bad guys has a facial disfigurement.
Oh, you're good.
Excellent.
Because Johnny Depp's pretending to be Native American. Oh, sorry.
No, it's actually because the villain is portrayed as having a cleft lip, which Disney describes as a ruthless outlaw whose terribly scarred face is a perfect reflection of the bottomless pit that passes for his soul.
Yeah. Talking about the bird on Johnny Depp's head? I was confused. Wow. Okay.
Okay, and what do you suppose this headline refers to, taken from 9news.com in Colorado?
Oh, we started, so we'll finish.
Indeed. Okay, listen to this headline. You're going to love this. What do you think this refers to? Teen's disability doesn't stop him from achieving dreams.
Dyslexia.
It could be anything, couldn't it? Yeah, Lawrence, do you want to give it a guess?
Oh, I think he wanted to be a dancer. Let's go with that.
We're going to go for a glee type thing. Well, actually, it's a story about an 18-year-old with muscular dystrophy who's about to get this start at university. His name is Nathan Williams, and he's from Denver. He wants to do a degree in business and engineering so that he can run an engineering business.
Well,
heartwarming stuff.
I think he deserves a medal.
Anyway, let's get to the point that I know that you've all been waiting for. Beer. Last month we had a colossal response to the cerebral palsy beer from Sweden. But since then we've actually discovered, thanks mainly to Lawrence here, that there's a rich history of disability beers. And Lawrence, we have now anointed you with the title of disability alcohol correspondent for Ouch. So can you tell us a little bit more about the history of disability beer?
Well, first, I'm absolutely honored. I mean, I've been called many things in my life, but I think that's one of the best. There are all kinds of interesting things happening with beer. I mean, we've got beer producers out in Northern California who have teamed with disabled folks in a workshop and employment scheme to get them to make their own beer. There's a pub in London, right there where you are, that trained all of its staff in sign language and all other very cool deaf-friendly things just to cater to deaf customers. I don't know what that
and
says
about deaf
culture.
And why have I never, boom, boom, heard of this?
I don't know, but I feel we should take an Ouch trip there later.
Oh,
well,
absolutely.
I mean, it's amazing. And the guy that owns this place, are you ready for this? You can't make it
go
up.
On.
His name is Paul Cripps. It's just unbelievable. And it's called the Deaf Lounge. It's in Seven Sisters. And they also welcome hearing people. So, you know,
oh,
I don't
that's
think
a
there's
relief.
Any discrimination
no,
there. But they've got a deaf security guard. They've got deaf bar staff. They've got a partially deaf DJ. I know there's two or three jokes in there. And even the fire alarm has a flashing alert, you know, so if you're in the lavatory or whatever and things really kick off, you know, you can be alerted and get out of there in time. But I've got to make a trip back to London just to check this place out.
It sounds phenomenal.
And what's most amazing to me is that, you know, you might think this is a relatively recent phenomenon, but at the end of the 19th century, you know, the last century, there were all this marketing around beer, particularly sweeter stouts, that were marketed as invalid stouts. And they were known to be especially nutritious. So before we had, you know, people that were health conscious and they were looking at their calories and advertising watchdogs would, you know, make sure that people were telling the truth. Breweries around the world promoted this supposedly healthy, nutritious qualities of stout, in essence, as liquid food.
Well, I remember my grandma Betty used to tell me that I needed to drink half a pint of Guinness a day to make myself get better.
That's right.
Maysoon, invalid stout, are you interested? Would you drink it?
Well, I wanted to talk about the cerebral palsy beer because I saw that we were going to talk about beer, I looked it up. And I have one problem with that beer. And it's the chick that they drew on the bottle.
Oh, I know.
Okay, wait, but let me talk about this for a second. First of all, she looks like she's underage. I don't think she should be anywhere near beer, not to mention on the beer. Second of all, she doesn't look like she combed her hair or did anything to make herself presentable. I think it would just be better, instead of drawing that girl, draw her after she drank the beer and hopped out of the chair and started dancing.
This is purely anecdotal evidence, of course, but I've been told that small amounts of alcohol or reasonable amounts of alcohol can actually loosen spasticity. They can sort of, you know, if you're having difficulty speaking, they can loosen tight lips, make it a little bit easier to speak. You know, I think that the folks who were putting out invalid stout back in the day might have been onto something. I've got a text from an advert from 1908. They can kind of give you the flavor of what they were after if you're curious in hearing it.
Of course.
Yeah.
So 1908, this is the Dominion Brewery Company out of Toronto. In capital letters, it says, "Confidence in yourself is all right, but you must have energy," again in caps, "to back it up in life's battles. If you want something to give you vim, life, and the power to do things," here we go in caps again, "invalid stout will supply it."
It's need nourishing. Some of this in my life.
And
where
I'm just
has
thinking,
this been?
1908 in cities such as Toronto and New York, no, very little sanitation, slums, rats, you know.
Ew.
Life was terrible for people with
That's
disabilities,
now.
But yet beer was
totally
specifically available. I think that's
right,
fantastic.
And here's the last sentence, really, that I think tells it as best as anything can. "Its nourishing and tonic properties are unequaled by anything on the market. Look for our name, Invalid Stout."
And hang on a minute, tell me about Peg Leg Stout. I've got that written down
peg
as well.
Leg Stout.
This is the rival, I suppose.
That's a brewery, I'm trying to remember, I think out of Colorado. You know, so I think that counts. There's the Black River Brewing Company out of Vermont used to offer a long-term disability IPA back in the late 1990s. So,
wow.
I think that this is a trend that from the past that needs to be revisited. I think we're just at the beginning of the old being new again.
What are you going to name your brew, Lawrence?
I think it would have to be Spastic Fantastic.
And I would call, I would never do this because I'm Muslim and it's bad, but as, you know, solidarity with my disabled people, I'd call it Palsy Pilsner.
I think whatever it is, it has to have lots and lots of hops.
I'm pretty sure that you'd call yours albino ale.
Something along those lines, possibly. Yeah. And what about you?
I don't know. There's not really much that goes with hypermobility syndrome vodka tonic. I don't know. Mine's
complicated caliber.
Exactly. Anyway, thank you so much for your time, Lawrence and Maysoon, and it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you today.
Thanks for having
Thank
me.
You.
Thank you.
Bottoms up.
Catch you at the pub.
Ramadan Kareem, bye.
Who is Kate Monaghan?
I don't know if I experienced being a child with a disability because I just thought it was normal that everybody had a bit of pain and I just thought I needed to man up a bit more and get on with it. It was when I reached my early teens that I started to realise that something was very different and very wrong, I guess. Doctors spent a while trying to do crazy things like lengthen bones and all of that kind of stuff to see if they could fix me. It sort of came on over time. Suddenly my world got smaller and smaller as I became more and and more restricted in what I could and couldn't do. And it was really difficult at an age when everyone's going out and getting drunk and going dancing and all of that kind of stuff. It didn't take too long for me to readjust and for me to sort of reimagine the boundaries of where they were in my life and start to sort of challenge those boundaries and start to think of the ways that I could do things rather than the ways that I couldn't do things.
The Ouch Talk Show.
One theme of this year's Edinburgh Fringe Festival is disability, and there are quite a number of disability-related shows. Two of the acts are here with us now. Dougie Walker and Tom Skelton from Racing Minds are in the studio with us. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
And here's a clip from one of your plays from last year.
So, lad, did you do it?
Oh, I did, Mr. Albert. Exactly what you said. I stole into that pub wearing this tiny bowler hat with socks upon me hands and ordered the pints and poured the powder in them.
So, you're both visually impaired, but more on you in a second.
Yeah, much more, I hope, because I'm intrigued. Now, comedian Lee Ridley, known as Lost Voice Guy, he's joining us down the line from Newcastle. Hello, Lee.
Hello there.
And as you may have guessed, Lee has no voice and uses an app on his tablet computer to communicate with the audience and with us. And here he is in action.
When I realised I'd never be able to talk again, I was speechless. I began to try to communicate through the medium of dance. A bit like Strictly Come Dancing Cross would give us a clue.
Lee, I have been to one of your shows and I do find you hilarious. But part of the comedian's craft is actually to interact with the audience. So how does speaking through a communication aid affect how you improvise?
I write the material beforehand and copy and paste it into the iPad. Then I just press the jokes I wanted to speak during the gig. Obviously, this is pretty limited in terms of audience interaction. But I've got a bit of banter with the audience in my Edinburgh show, and I'd like to work on this side of things more in the future. It just depends on how fast I can type. I have got some comebacks stored, just in case I get heckled.
Now, Tom and Dougie, I know you make up part of the improv comedy act Racing Minds, and it's all entirely off the cuff. So how do you get by as two visually impaired guys when you can't actually see what your fellow actors are doing or how the audience is reacting?
With how the audience is reacting, I think most comedians would agree that that's actually a very auditory interaction. You tell how your audience feels about something by how they sound rather than by how they look, because you often have lights in your face and things anyway, so you can't really see your audience. The show we do is a kind of a one long story, so we just start off getting three or four suggestions from the audience, and that's fine because you just ask them and then they respond verbally and you do it that way.
And you're going down into the audience as well.
Yeah, one of us goes down into the audience, and I have every now and again said, and you, madam, can you give me a suggestion? Yeah. And picked a man.
Brian.
or you know, the other way around. And
I think for the show that we did last year, which was like an improvised radio play, we did kind of work out five gender neutral terms that Dougie could use so that he wouldn't offend anyone in either way.
As far as the other performers, the two other guys go, and in fact each other, there's a lot of mime involved in improv, and we do sometimes run up against a few hiccups.
Well, like sometimes someone might be miming reading a book or cooking a pan, and if I'm too far across the other side of the stage, I'll say, I'll just define it like, you're having a nice play on your computer, and if they're looking at a book, quite obviously, then... But then the thing with improv is that once you define something, automatically you're right. So the other person will have to say, yes, my book-shaped computer.
Because there are no rules, are there? So it really doesn't matter if you misinterpret something.
That's it. Anything you do is, in a sense, the right thing to have done, because, you know, the world doesn't exist until you sort of define it.
And are the two other guys in the act visually impaired as well?
No, they are fully sighted.
Now, coming back to you, Lee, you weren't doing comedy 2 years ago, and then you've had a meteoric rise to fame. So what were you doing before comedy came a-knocking?
2 years ago, I was looking forward to a nice relaxing summer holiday. Now I am stressing about a month of gigs in the most inaccessible city in the world. I've always been a big fan of comedy, and I love going to watch stand-up comedy myself. I'd always said that, If I could talk, that would probably be my dream job. I never expected to do it though. I just didn't think it was possible. Then, some friends said that it might work, and that I should try it. I thought they were crazy at first. But the idea stuck in the back of my mind. Eventually I decided to give it a try, because I knew I'd regret it if I didn't.
This one is your first full Edinburgh run. So can you tell us a bit about what your show's about and what it's like?
My show is called Voice of Choice, and is basically me taking the mick out of my life for an hour. It's a look back over my life so far, and all the ups and downs that I have had. From being ill, as a baby, and the doctors not knowing what was wrong. Obviously because they didn't have Google to check in those days. To me growing up and being independent. I also mention my X Factor audition and some other stuff as well. Hopefully it's very funny but will make people go away and think about things a bit more as well.
It sounds absolutely fantastic. And not to be left out of this, Tom and Dougie, I'm sorry we both... I feel that we laughed a bit more at least after we did it at yours, but now is the time to redeem yourself.
Not that it's a competition or anything, pressure.
Even though it obviously is. But you have kindly agreed to do a bit of improv right here in the vast Studio 8A. We've never recorded from this studio before. It's so vast, it's got a grand piano in the corner. Now, I know you're going to need a little bit of help, so we're going to ask the creator of the Ouch Talk Show, Damon Rose, to come in.
I'm really going to be... outnumbered by the visually impaired people in this room, then.
Evil plan is to make the entire show full of blind and visually impaired
You're
people.
You're almost there.
I've
my
come
friend.
Perilously close.
All
I need to do is find some way to eject you, Kate.
Here comes Damon.
Along with his guide dog called Beckett.
Beckett is not visually impaired.
No,
so
and will be taking a limited role in these proceedings. Dogs and improv are infamously poor together. So you've got an audience of four people now, Tom and Dougie, so the floor is yours. And off you go. We are all yours.
Okay, fine. Can I just ask someone to give me a suggestion for something that they find irritating? Maybe just on a daily basis or something specifically today that has annoyed you a little bit.
Taking pills. Out of pill packets.
Taking pills out of pill packets. Yeah. Is that you're right with that, Thomas? Fine. Okay. And
anyone else? Has anyone else got a suggestion? Lee, have you got anything that you find annoying?
Russell Brand.
Okay, so
the two things are quite connected there, aren't they?
Fine. I think what we'll have to do now, I'm afraid, is take a quick break just for a little news broadcast, if that's quite all right.
This is the 6 o'clock news. The government have announced today that in order to make taking pills out of packages easier, now Russell Brand will be forced to dispense pills from every pillbox to every person in need of a pill. He will have to do this 23 hours a day, and the rest of the time he will be travelling between shifts. Now, here is the Secretary of State for Health, Sir Trumpington Baysby, here to talk about this policy.
Yes.
Sir Trumpington, do you really think this is the most practical way for people to be dispensed pills from pillboxes by getting Russell Brand to dispense them personally?
No, not at all. No, it is not not efficient, it's not wise, but it is cheap.
It is cheap indeed, yes. Is this the only reason why you're going for this policy, Sir Trumpington?
Well, Russell Brand has been running up quite a debt in terms of what he has to contribute to society, and so we thought we'd put his particular skill set to use, he's done many, many hours of popping pills out of packages so far. So we thought we would, each man from his abilities to each to his need.
Ah, yes, the new motto of your party.
Yes, we have done quite a U-turn and are now a strictly Marxist party.
Ding, ding, wonderful. Ding, ding, ding. Brilliant. That was absolutely excellent. I can't really think of a better use for Russell Brand than I'd love him to just sit by my bed dispensing my pills for me. So I think we've come up with an excellent suggestion.
Now I know Lee obviously talks about disability in his show, but you guys, Racing Minds, don't at all. Why is it that you avoid it?
I wouldn't even say we avoid it. If it came up, if it was part of what sort of naturally came up, then we would talk about it. But I think that's, we're telling stories, and we tell those stories about whatever comes up from the audience. So, you know, the audience doesn't often suggest visual impairment as a subject for
and
story.
Why would they? It can be quite dull. Now, Lee, what do you get from consciously doing disability material? Is it unavoidable for you to breach that topic as you are using a speech synthesizer?
I don't think it was unavoidable. It was something I chose to concentrate on, mainly because that's what I have most experience in, and so I had plenty of material to use from it. I don't want to become one of those comedians who only jokes about their disability or whatever, though. I just think it was an obvious starting point. I also wanted to show that you shouldn't be scared to talk and joke about disability. As long as it's handled well, then it can be a very funny subject.
And it's really... Sorry, do...
Oh, no, I was just going to say, and I think it's, you know, thanks to people like Lee and other, you know, people who are disabled people, especially who can make jokes about disability, it's just, it becomes more normal. It's a more normal thing, whereas I think there was before an attitude of like, oh, they're so brave and they're doing so well, whereas if someone's just taking the mickey out of their everyday lives, then I think it's just much more understandable and people warm to it and understand it a lot.
Because you've written some stand-up, haven't you, about sort of visual impairment?
Yeah. And I think that just helped me to see the funny side of it, and also just you feel like you're benefiting from it if you can use it, and I think it's always...
Do you think it's a bit of a form of therapy as well?
Oh, probably, yeah. Like, not consciously, but I think it definitely is, because you're kind of twisting the supposed disadvantage to your advantage by making people laugh and saying, aha, it is a strength, not actually a weakness, as you might think.
Other disability-related 2013 Edinburgh shows include Big Trouble in Little China, a show about women's problems by comedian with restricted growth Tanya Lee Davis.
My Son's Not Rain Man, a one-man show about having an autistic son by John Williams, who was on the show last month.
And If These Spasms Could Speak by yet another comedian with cerebral palsy, Robert Softley.
So thank you so much, Dougie and Tom, for coming on the programme, Damon. And best of luck with your mammoth Edinburgh run.
Thank you
also to Lee, and best of luck to you as well with your show at Edinburgh this year. Thank you, Lee.
Thanks, Lee.
Thank you.
Who is Rob Crossan?
Rob Crossan is an alpha albino male. Rob Crossan lives in Brixton in South London, but grew up in the northwest of England and has done a variety of incredibly pointless and stupid jobs over the years in a lifelong bid to avoid responsibility, including being a stand-up comedian in South Africa, working for Lads Mags for many a long year, devoting my life to boobs and kebabs, before at the age of 30, when I started to feel like the vicar at the school disco. I now do travel writing for various publications, and I also do sex and relationship advice for women's magazines. I narrate audiobooks, and I generally consider it a quest of mine to never ever have a proper job as long as I live.
The Ouch Talk Show. Just when I look behind, seeing
the place where I come from, I feel so wonderful. And that's a clip from Broken Hearted Man by Kevin Reeves, not Keanu, and we'll be hearing that in full at the end of the show. But for now, we're going to talk about volunteering. Now, this is something I'm going to polish my halo a bit here. I know quite a bit about, you know, I started off at Radio Lollipop at the Bristol Children's Hospital. I've run sort of lots of children's camps, and I've literally just got back from Jamaica where I was running a summer school for children out there. And I'm pretty confident in saying that, Rob, this is not something that somebody like yourself would be familiar with, is that correct?
Incredibly pejorative. What makes you think that I would never volunteer? Apart from the fact that I've always told you how I feel about sharing.
Exactly, because you don't like other people.
I do like other people. I'm just picky. I have better, more discerning taste than you. That's not true.
Whatever.
And anyway, Hospital the Radio, I did that too, and that's entirely self-serving. We both did that because we wanted to be on the radio.
I can't believe you'd say something like that. So what else have you been doing then?
Which I should say, if the Countess of Chester Hospital are listening, I'm really sorry, but when you asked me at Radio Lion to go and take requests off all the patients, sometimes I just used to sit in reception, make them all up, and then go back to the studio again.
Rob, that is awful.
Really sorry. It's 20 years on. I feel like I needed to get that off my chest. It's been burdening me for a while.
Struck off from volunteering circles.
No, I redeemed myself. When I lived in South Africa, I worked for The Big Issue. I was a writer for them, and in my spare time, I coached The Big Issue issue homeless vendor football team.
Okay, all right, that's fine. Okay.
Redeemed?
Slightly redeemed.
I don't really want redeemed. A halo, though, you see.
Well, you know, some of us have them naturally. Anyway, so volunteering, or, if you like, working for free to give something back to your community. It was at the heart of the government's big society idea, though we don't hear so much about that these days.
Well, the big society. Exactly. Lots of disabled people volunteer because they can't work and have lots of time on their hands, and it's often seen as a positive step towards getting something on your CV, moving closer to paid employment and connecting with the community.
Well, let's introduce you to our guest we've got to chat about this subject. On the phone is Simon Redcliffe from Waterways volunteer charity Thames 21. Where are you today, Simon?
Today, you wonderful people, I'm at the Waltworks Nature Reserve and I'm with the Outward Volunteering Group, and they have a range of learning disabilities.
On Skype, we've got Martin Sibley, co-editor of Disability Horizons online magazine, who has recently volunteered overseas. Hi, Martin.
Hi there, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Yeah, all good, thank you.
And on the line from Cambridge, it's Gemma Mindham from CSV UK. Hi, Gemma.
Hi.
Simon, let's start with you first. You've written about how volunteering actually saved your life. Can you tell us a bit about that?
I had heart and lung trouble, and that was quite serious, and that brought on chronic fatigue in me, which I found a lot harder to cope with how society deals, and it's very misunderstood as an illness, and you slowly go down a downward spiral, and it's very difficult. Debilitating and causes a lot of mental health issues as well. But, you know, and the mind and the body is not on the same page, and you get extremely isolated and depressed. It's quite a long haul.
Yeah.
But I was doing like graded exercise therapy.
Yeah.
And after I got discharged, because I hadn't been working for a long time, volunteering was seen as an ideal way to get my self-esteem, confidence back, and to interact with the outside world again. So I started volunteering at Thames 21, fell in love with it, the first event, and from that it's been a magical 3 years. So now I'm in a position to give something back, and I work a lot with people with mental health issues or learning disabilities, and through Thames 21, and that's very briefly from volunteer to a river keeper to being full-time staff. So,
now, Martin, I know you have spinal muscular atrophy, and you've been abroad volunteering, which sounds rather adventurous, and we'll come back to that shortly, but you've got a really long history of volunteering. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, when I was about, 15, 16, it's compulsory at schools to do a kind of two-week work experience placement. And during the time I was meant to do it, I had to have spinal surgery, which is quite a common thing with my impairment. So I ended up doing it the sort of summer afterwards, where I went to the local leisure centre and just helped out on reception and doing some of the data entry stuff. And then that was quite an ongoing theme throughout my A-levels and at university, because on the one hand, I struggled to get paid work because I wasn't really going to be Tom Cruise in Cocktail behind a bar with my level of impairment. But also it was important to me to still do something fulfilling and worthy and, yeah, add to the CV to help my future career prospects.
Now, Gemma, Simon and Martin have done it successfully, quite clearly, but can it be difficult for disabled people to volunteer their time? Because often it seems like it should be the other way around. Shouldn't able-bodied people be volunteering to help people with disabilities? Or is that an appallingly condescending thing to say?
It is quite condescending. Am I allowed to say? Yeah, it is a little bit
condescending. Yeah, you strike an arrow through my through my heart. That's fine.
I'm really sorry. Don't collapse. It is quite condescending, but it happens. It can be difficult for some disabled people, not everyone, quite clearly not everyone, and it's all about the individual. With CSV, we do have projects which we call supported volunteering, where individuals, disabled people who do need that little extra support, perhaps some advocacy, a way in, a bit of support to find that volunteering opportunity, or maybe just increase the confidence to go and find that volunteering opportunity. That's what we do with those. And the support offered ranges from able-bodied mentors to mentors who have disabilities themselves.
Now, Martin, I know you've got quite high care needs, haven't you?
Yeah.
So how tricky was it to do volunteer work in another country, and how much sort of prep went into kind of getting everything ready and all the support in place and stuff?
Yeah, because obviously at home I've got the sort of 24/7 care package. I've got my hoist. I've got the wheelchair. Obviously, that's all sorted. So, yeah, going abroad, it was pretty tricky to get the transport there sorted, but also bringing in the equipment and ensuring that I still had the personal care assistance for the duration as well. So it took a long, long time.
I've got a little bone that I feel I need to pick with you, Gemma. Is that okay?
Yeah, go on. Right, you're just getting me back now.
A little bit, slightly. Well, the thing about volunteering is that it seems to me that it's very difficult to do it if, at the same time, they don't have a backup, whether it be their parents or whatever, who actually give them that freedom financially so they can volunteer.
It depends on the volunteering. Volunteering, I think you're thinking about volunteering as being a purely 9-to-5 daytime type role, which it quite evidently isn't. If you listen to our colleagues on the show, for example, I have a full-time day job. I need to work, no two ways about it. I have a family to support. And I volunteer and manage to volunteer within the scouting movement because the timing of the scouting movement, I could volunteer at weekends, I could volunteer in the evenings. And I just sometimes think that we are a bit too prescriptive, aren't we, as a society, perhaps the government as well, around, you know, what a job has to be, what we all have to do.
So it's about being a bit more flexible, isn't
it? It's about being flexible. And you know, you can seek advice and support. That's why agencies like ourselves are there. That's why sort of CSV and volunteer bureaus are out there, about going in and saying, this is me. This is what I do at the moment. This is what I'm good at. This is what I'm looking for. What's out there? Can you help me?
I agree with about thinking outside the box, and things are in society. You get these rigid boxes and it's only a success if, for example, you do so many hours volunteering. I don't see volunteering like that at all. It's about engaging people's quality of life, physical, mental health, and in terms of the outward group, who have a range of learning disabilities, and you take it as an individual, you get their trust and their respect, and you teach them on different levels, but you treat them all as individuals, but treat them all exactly the same.
Martin, many disabled people rail against voluntary work because they feel that it kind of sort of undervalues them, and that somebody should actually be giving them paid employment rather than just kind of ignoring them on the jobs market and just expecting disabled people to do bits and bobs of volunteer work. I mean, what do you feel about that?
Yeah, I guess it's two sides to it, isn't it? That there's a lot of work to do with employers about being more open to employing disabled people. But then also, it is very difficult out there, whether you're disabled or not disabled, to get a job. And so the more skills and experience and knowledge you've gained through things like volunteering, the better chance you've got of getting into paid work. So volunteering can be as empowering as it obviously can be disempowering, but it's about how you use it and drive it yourself, I think.
Gemma, can I just come back before we go? You piqued my interest a moment ago about when you mentioned the Scouts.
Oh, yeah.
Are there loads of disabled kids in the Cubs and Scouts these days? Because there weren't when I was joining. I remember so vividly, there was a kid in a wheelchair and he wanted to join the Cubs that I was in.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, well, you can't because you're in a wheelchair. You won't be able to like climb a tree or pitch a tent or anything.
Yeah.
And
he actually managed
to get in. This was in the late 80s. And he came back in with a magpie, an injured magpie, which he'd nursed back to full health. And he went to the arcade. Look, I'm a good kid. Look, I've got this injured magpie.
Are you sure you're not in a
nursed
famous
back to full
five
health.
Novel here?
And he said, well, yeah, you can join. So basically an injured magpie got this kid in a wheelchair into the Cubs.
Oh, yeah, that's intriguing.
I wish all jobs were like that. If I could just bring an injured chaffinch into my next job interview.
Say,
you've
look,
got
I'm
the
a good
job,
person.
Robbie.
I'm a good person. Give me the job. No, it's really interesting. And I wouldn't want to start to go into detail about any one particular group. But having volunteered with the scouting movement, you know, yeah, there are a mixture of individuals there, disability or not, you know.
I think we are going to have to say goodbye to yourself and to Simon. So thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye.
So, Martin, we have kept you on the line because we are going to let you do a plug for your next great adventure. But in return, I am going to ask you a personal question. So, first of all, tell us about your next challenge.
Yep. So, following on from all the volunteering and the road trip last year when I was on Ouch last, I'm now heading off from John O'Groats to Land's End, the other way to the usual way, by electric wheelchair, which is about 970 miles, I believe.
Wow, and who are you doing that with?
it's going to be with my girlfriend, and she's going to be biking alongside me in the spirit of great old inclusion.
Well, hang on a minute. So this means that you're sitting down in your chair and just pushing a button for a very long time. I hate to
hasn't your girlfriend demigrate got the what you're doing. Is,
hasn't your girlfriend, shouldn't she be getting more credit than you?
Absolutely, yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, in terms of the physicality, she's going to be really, really struggling, and her training is the bit that's going to need a lot, you know, of effort put into it. However, logistically, it's very tricky with the wheelchair. We ran out of battery and had to get a taxi home the other day because the battery stopped on me.
And that's for the Olympic Legacy, is that right?
Yeah, it's Olympic Legacy, big lottery funded. The project's called Britain's Personal Best. So if anyone wants to get out and challenge themselves, go to whatsyours.org.
So, Sibs, now I've given you your chance to plug. I now get to ask my personal question. So how did you meet your very lovely girlfriend?
Yeah, well, last year she was my PA. So I met her through work.
Through work, nice. And did you give her the job on Looks Alone or...?
No, she was very capable for all the requirements of a PA and nothing else more sordid.
Come on, let's get this straight. You gave her the job as your PA because you'd fancied her. That was one of the main reasons you gave her the job. Am I right?
I'm not going to admit to that. It was a very beautiful romance that spawned out of the work, not in the interview.
Have you ever dated one of your carers before?
At uni, there was one or two.
Whoa, so, chain carer dating.
Nice.
So yeah, and they were from CSV, so we tied the circle of the programme very well.
Perfect.
And if you've dated your carer, please do drop us an email at ouch@bbc.co.uk, as I think there could be a nice compendium of stories here.
Hashtag carer love. Brilliant. Thank you for your time, Martin. Great to chat to you.
Great to see you again, guys. See you
Bye.
Soon.
The ice cream van has left the building. Number 99 is no more. We'll return in early September to take away your back-to-school blues in show 100. That's show 100, folks. I really hope we're going to have some kind of party.
There better be at least a scotch egg.
Exactly. Anyway, thanks to the team, Damon Rose, studio manager Roger Daines, and producer Emma Tracy.
And it's time to face the music, as the man on the X Factor might say. And this month it's from Kevin Reeves, previous musical guest with his band Crater Maker. Kevin's gone solo now, and here's his latest offering, Broken Hearted Man. So until the next very special show, to all you very special people, goodbye.
Goodbye.
I hate how it's turning out. I feel like I'm burning out. And now my dreams fade in decay. That is falling out. Just when I look behind, seeing the place where I come from, I feel so wonderful.
not lose.